Hi, and welcome to the MAN panel. I'm so excited that you've chosen to join me. I'm here with a wonderful group of male experts who are here to help you understand important things to help you have more enjoyable communication and relationships, specifically with men. And I'm really excited to be welcoming back a returning guest, and his name is Bruce Music. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, Michelle. It's good to be here again.
Happy to have you back. And I know some may be thank you for joining us, Bruce. I know some may be familiar with you and your work, but I want to give just a real short intro. Bruce Music is the founder of Love at First Fight. He's built a reputation as the passionate coach that marriage therapists refer their toughest clients to. That's quite a distinction and honor to have there, Bruce, right?
I earned it the hard way.
Earned it the hard way. Got it. He has more than 25 years of coaching experience under his belt and is sometimes referred to as the couple's whisperer, although his marriage advice is rarely whispered. Are they shouting it? Hopefully not.
Hopefully from the rooftops.
Did you hear what Bruce said? He said, you should do this, right? Having worked with thousands of couples, experience has taught him that even the toughest relationship problems can be repaired with a healthy dose of loving connection and what Bruce calls kind conversations. I'm all for kind conversations. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. His TED Talk has more than 3 million views, and he has been featured on the BBC and Financial Times, to name a couple of outlets. So welcome once again, Bruce.
Great. Lovely to be here. Let's do this.
Let's do this. So we're going to be talking about a really important topic today, and I'm going to let you roll with it. But just to let our audience know where we're going, we're going to be talking about three things you must know before committing, which I think will be relevant for many of the people in this audience. So with that, Bruce, I'm going to let you take it away.
Okay. Well, Michelle, interrupt me at any point if you have any questions or you want to add some side ideas here. And I am excited to be speaking to an audience of, I imagine, predominantly single women, because mostly I'm speaking to couples. Mm-hmm. And you guys listening to this are incredibly fortunate because you're learning this information before things go wrong in your relationship. Most people come to me almost too late, having fallen in love, and the relationship starts, you know, getting rocky. And then sometimes it's too late to do anything about it. I certainly wish myself I had discovered this stuff. So I'll just give you a quick background on who I am, how I came to be here, and then we'll dive into these three things you need to know before you commit in a long-term committed relationship. So I wasn't always a relationship expert. In fact, for a lot of my life, I guess I was a relationship disaster in that most of my relationships ended the same way. And at some point, I woke up to a profound realization that the common denominator in all of my failed relationships was me. And I had to kind of tell the truth to myself that I had some growing to do. And that's what got me interested in learning about romantic relationships. And I started off reading books, and then I started discovering research papers, and I went deep. And then I started flying all over the world to learn at the feet of some of the authors I had studied. And I was never really had an intention to be helping couples. I was just really curious and really wanted my next relationship to last. And eventually, after a couple of years of learning, and I'm the kind of guy that whenever I'm into something, all my friends know about it. I use them as like, I just teach to them. And after a couple of my friends came to me and said, you know, Bruce, actually, you should really consider doing this professionally. You're really good at it. A seed was planted, and I went back to school twice, got qualified twice to work with couples, and somehow fell into the niche of helping couples in trouble. And perhaps it's the intensity of that work that's so rewarding, but whatever it was, that's what I ended up doing. And I started Love at First Fights, which is my company, loveatfirstfight.com. And I help over 300 or 400 couples every year to turn their marriages and relationships around. So I've been doing this for about 12 years now. So I've had a lot of data to gather patterns from. And so what I'm going to share with you today comes from having spoken with thousands upon thousands of people. and seeing their patterns and the same mistakes being made over and over and over and over again. And I want to share with you what I feel are probably the top three most important things you need to know as a single person getting into a relationship. And the first one is that relationships naturally evolve through three developmental stages. And I never knew this. I wish I had. And just like growing up from being, you know, a newborn to a toddler to a teenager to eventually, you know, like my stepdaughter, a 19-year-old, almost 20-something going into the world, you go through levels, developmental levels, and you can't skip them. So you can't go from toddler to 20-something. You've got to go through teenager first. Our relationship also goes through stages that you cannot skip, okay? And some of us may never get to the last or third stage. Many of us stay stuck in the second. So what is the first one? I bet you've all guessed it's the romance stage. It's that stage where you single people watching this are about to embark on when you meet somebody and you're going to fall in love. And it's the stage that happens when it's usually the relationship is anywhere between new and about 2 years old. It never lasts longer than 2 years. Most likely it'll last about 6 months max, but it can stretch out to 2 years. And it's this beautiful time where we're falling head over heels in love. Our brain is pumping out a cocktail of love drugs like oxytocin and serotonin and dopamine and vasopressin. And we're literally high on drugs during the romance stage, which is why it's so addictive and it's so fun. And it's a natural stage, and its purpose is to get us to connect, to bond together as a couple. And this is mostly done through the hormone oxytocin. And oxytocin is known as the cuddle hormone. It's that drug that gets the two of you feeling close and connected and falling in love. And in this stage, because we're high on drugs, we can only see our partner through these kind of rose-tinted glasses. We completely ignore all their bad side, right? All those red flags that people talk about, we don't see any of them because we're drugged, like we're high. And
Bruce, there's a there's a saying that says when you have on rose-colored glasses, all the flags just look like flags. So you can't see the color of the flag.
That's so good. Can I steal that? I love that. So that's exactly it. And then, you know, we only show them our good side and kind of hide all of our, you know, flaws, and we keep those to ourselves. So we really are operating in the most immature form of love, just like being a toddler is kind of the most immature form of being human. We're like toddlers in our relationships in the romance stage. And we really can't see the other person objectively. And we don't show them our flaws. So we're not really being completely honest about who we are either. And I think Hollywood has led us to believe that this is love, where really this is not anywhere near close to love. This is infatuation. These are drugs. Neither of you are choosing each other. You're falling. It's almost like you're being forced into relationship by the drugs. It's like somebody shot you up in your arm and suddenly you're high and you can't help yourself but fall in love. So there's not a lot of choice going on here. But somewhere between 2 months and 2 years, the drugs wear off, which is kind of a bummer. And one day, you know, we wake up and
it's so exciting and fun and what we all look forward to so much, right?
Yeah. And for a little while, we're desperately scrambling, trying to get them back. And we'll try to change our partner and manipulate and do whatever we need to do to get that damn high back. But eventually one day we wake up and we look over at the person, you know, lying next to us. And we're like, I don't know, man, I'm not sure I made the right choice here. You know, like you don't look as good as you used to. And where I thought you were Mr. or Mrs. Perfect, you know, I'm not so sure anymore. And the glasses are kind of like whacked off our face, and suddenly we're faced with the reality of who the other person is. And so are they. They're looking at us thinking the same thing, going, geez, you know, where I used to think you were so you know, in touch with your emotions. Now I'm just seeing you're a drama queen. Or, you know, where I used to think, you know, you were so cool, calm and collected, almost like James Bond. Now I can see you're emotionally shut down and like you're just completely detached from your feelings. And, you know, you don't even know how to listen to mine. And suddenly the reality of who the other person is presents itself. And this is a shock. It's a wake-up call. And it's devastating. It's a real kind of fall from grace to some extent. And our partner falls off the pedestal we've put them on, as do we, off their pedestal. And this is where conflict enters the relationship. I'm sure every single one of you is nodding your head in recognition as you think back to previous relationships which ended in the power struggle stage. So we go from the romance stage into the power struggle stage. And just as the romance stage had a purpose, which was to get us bonded together, the power struggle stage also has a purpose. And it's to get us separate again so that we don't lose each other in relationship and become this kind of codependent, you know, brother, sister, cuddly, mushy mess that is unable to function independently. And it's the power struggle stage is necessary, as is the romance stage. It's important to be a couple, but it's also important to remain yourself and autonomous and independent in the relationship, because otherwise one day you'll wake up and feel like you've lost yourself. In fact, that's one of the most common complaints I hear from one partner in a couple that comes to me for marriage help or relationship help, is I feel like I've lost myself in this relationship. And this process,
most common concerns that women express to me about getting into a partnership is they're afraid they're going to lose their autonomy, their independence, their identity, who they are by being in a partnership, especially for women that are a little bit more mature, which is who I tend to work with, who have worked really hard for that independence and autonomy and identity. So yeah, this comes up
exactly
a lot.
So what I have to say to that is that you will lose your independence and autonomy in a relationship for a little while in the romance stage. That's natural, that's normal, and that's okay. As long as you know what's going on, there has to be some form of surrendering myself in order to merge together as a couple. If you stay hyper-independent, you will never create the couple bond. And so women who are very successful in their lives often struggle to create the bond because they're so terrified of losing their independence, exactly as you're saying. And so what I say is just let go, let it happen. And then in the power struggle stage is the natural time where you're going to have to separate, and it'll happen naturally. Now, you separate too much because then you lose the relationship. But if you don't separate enough, you stay kind of in this gushy, mooey codependence. And this process is called differentiation. That's what psychologists call it, differentiating from each other. And it's difficult because once you've fallen in love, it almost feels like an abandonment when your partner starts withdrawing from you and wanting to spend more time on their own or with their friends that they had way before they met you. Many people in my courses and in my one-on-one consulting say things like, I feel hurt. He wants to spend time alone with his friends and not with me. And I'm like, that's a good thing. Encourage it. Because that's the power struggle stage. And the more you resist it, the more it will persist. The more you try and stop it from happening, the longer it'll transition through the power struggle stage to the next stage of relationship. Now, let's just talk about the power struggle stage for a little bit, because it's probably the most difficult one. And it's the one where most relationships end. And that's why I think understanding these three stages of relationships is really crucial for single people. Because if you don't know that the power struggle stage is coming, you will very easily assume that there's something wrong with the relationship, or probably more likely something wrong with the person that's lying next to you in your bed. And you'll break up with them thinking relationships shouldn't be this hard. That's probably the most common phrase I hear from my clients. Relationships shouldn't be this hard. I'm like, yeah, they're not that hard when you're in the romance stage, and they won't be that hard in the third stage either. You're just in the power struggle, which is where it's meant to be hard because the two of you are figuring out how to be together. And if you don't know this, you'll assume that your relationship's flawed or your partner's flawed, or perhaps even you're flawed. And you'll break up with each other and the relationship will end. In fact, most relationships do end in the power struggle stage, because in the romance stage, it's rare that they end because you're high on drugs. In the next stage, after the power struggle stage, it's rare that they end because you've gotten through most of your conflict and you're happy together. So it's the power struggle stage you want to be aware of and look out for and expect and almost celebrate and welcome when it arrives as, okay, we've graduated. Now we're teenagers. We're no longer toddlers. We're in the teenage stage. Now, you know how teenage years are. They're not easy. And that's what the power struggle stage is the equivalent of. Your relationship's teenage years. You're going to be figuring things out. It's going to be a ton of conflict. Or if you're like some couples, there's going to be zero conflict. And the number one predictor of divorce, according to Dr. John Gottman, is the absence of conflict. So zero conflict is as bad as, you know, conflict every day and constant fighting. And the reason is that if you're not fighting, you're not resolving your differences, you're not talking about what's going on. And so eventually it'll explode. All of that repressed, pushed down emotion and differences will suddenly come up like a volcano. You will have a massive fight and the relationship will break up and end right there and then. And one of you will be left thinking, what the heck just happened? Where did this come from? How did this relationship go from being head over heels in love to suddenly I'm single again? And that's because you weren't expecting the power struggle stage and you weren't talking about what was coming up in the relationship during the power struggle stage. So,
and that's probably because at least one person in the power struggle stage maybe did lose their identity or were too afraid to express what was going on or too disillusioned or something. They couldn't express it. And then it builds up inside and then all of a sudden blows like a volcano, right?
Exactly. And it's often the more withdrawn, reserved, avoidant man or a partner who's people-pleasing. Those two types are the most prone to not express their needs. The reserved, withdrawn, kind of emotionally shut down person tends to be afraid of intimacy. They're afraid of opening up Pandora's box. They've spent their entire life not talking about their feelings. So why would they start now? And, you know, it's often the woman who's pushing them to kind of talk about what's going on. And the man's like, no, thank you. Nope, not going there. Nope. Until eventually, you know, there's so much conflict that he goes, I can't do this anymore. And he leaves. Or she's just like, I can't deal with you anymore. I'm out of here. Or the people-pleasing one who tries to deal with conflict by saying yes when they mean no, or by appeasing their partner to try and make them happy rather than talking about what's authentically going on inside of them. That person eventually wakes up and go, I don't know who I am anymore because I've said yes so many times when I meant no that I don't even know what this relationship is anymore. So those are things to look out for. And a lot of what I do with my couples in the power struggle stage is teach them how to talk about what's going on in a safe, kind way without things escalating into volcanic eruptions and, the shit hitting the fan, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So if you're lucky enough to make it through the power struggle stage, you emerge as a couple interdependent. Okay, so interdependent means you're able to be healthily dependent on each other when you need to be, and also be autonomous and independent. And it's this flexible move of the two of you coming together and separating and coming together and separating. This could be hour by hour or day by day or week by week or, you know, season by season. But when your partner needs you, you're there. And you're there for them. And then when you need them, they're there for you. And you're able to be a couple and you're also able to have your own individual life. So on the macro, what this might look like is, you know, my wife and I wake up in the morning and we are literally like physically like this. We're clinging to each other. That's how we sleep to each other. We're clinging to each other. The morning we wake up, we have coffee together and then we separate for the day. As I go about my work and she goes about her work, she's a chef, I help couples. And then somewhere around about 5 or 6 in the afternoon, we come back together again. And then she'll go off, you know, last night she went out to dinner with some of her friends and I stayed at home and watched Netflix, which was wonderful. And then we come back together again. And it's this kind of flex and flow. Or there might be times where, you know, for 3 or 4 months, I'm kind of alone as I'm visiting my 85-year-old mom who lives in South Africa, where I'm originally from. And I, you know, last year I went away for 3 months and we were apart for 3 months because my mom, I was afraid my mom might get COVID and suddenly pass away. And I wanted to see her because she's old. And my wife couldn't get a visa to come visit with me to South Africa. So we were apart for 3 months. And then when we came together, we went on a road trip and we spent lots of time together because we'd missed each other. This is the natural flex and flow of the mature love stage. And the separation in the mature love stage, which is the name of the third stage, sorry, I didn't mention that, the mature love stage. The separation is not a threat in the mature love stage. In the romance stage, separation is a threat, okay? And in the power struggle stage, you're trying to come together, but for one partner, often coming together is a threat. The more withdrawn partner wants to kind of retreat and withdraw, and the other partner chases them, and that part is the threat. In the mature love stage, you're able to be together and apart, and both are wonderful. Your conflict has been resolved. You don't fight about things anymore. You may argue and disagree, but it doesn't escalate into blowout fights that where you, both of you are left hurt, feeling alone or sad or, you know, distant from each other and sleeping in separate sides of the bed or in a different room. That doesn't happen anymore. And in the mature love stage, one of the characteristics is that the couple often end up working on a joint project together that makes the world or their community a better place. This could be starting a business together. It could be having a baby. It could be starting a school. It could be traveling the world together. It's different for everybody. And the key ingredient of this project is that it's born out of being together. Usually it's not one person's idea that they had way before the couple became a couple. The idea came because of being a couple. Through going through the power struggle stage and their life together and living together, they realized that their coupledom has given birth to almost like a third entity, the relationship. And so now you've got partner A, partner B, and this third entity, their relationship, which is almost like the baby that they gave birth to, metaphorically speaking. And this baby has its own life and its own goals and its own gift to give to the world. And when the couple enter the mature love stage, this is often a natural progression. Their relationship gives back in some way, shape, or form. It might be small, it might be large, it might be on a local scale or a global scale, but it's a trait. You don't really get to the mature love stage unless you've been together for at least 5 years, I would have thought, on average. And being together 30 years doesn't guarantee you've made it to the romance, to the mature love stage. You can stay stuck in the power struggle stage 20, 30 years, and often my clients have been, and they're desperate by the time they come to me. They've been fighting and they've never managed to get that stable place in their relationship. Conflict ends for a while, but it always comes back because they're not resolving what comes up. So that's the first big idea that I think it's important that every single person know to expect the power struggle and to know what's required when you get into the power struggle.
Mm-hmm. Hey. So do you feel like it's important? So for example, my husband and I have been married for 15 years. I definitely remember the romance stage, the falling in love stage. I definitely remember sort of the power struggle when all of a sudden we're like, oh, maybe you're not quite so perfect as I thought. But I do feel like we've been able to work through that and transcend that, and that we're in the, what do you call the third stage? The couple
stage? The mature love stage.
Mature love stage. Mm-hmm. So for couples though, that are kind of in the early stage, they're like in the romance stage, what do you suggest to kind of like prepare them for the upcoming struggle stage, power struggle stage? And how do they talk about that? Because, I mean, I don't know. I mean, how do you bring that up? You know, we're madly in love right now, but 6 months from now, you might notice my toes are big and that I have a, you know, whatever, right? With this flower.
So that's such a great question. And I think a lot of the preparation cannot be done in the romance stage because the problems haven't arisen yet and you don't know what they are. Mm-hmm. So you almost need to wait until a power struggle happens. But what you can do to prepare yourself is learn the skills for dealing with conflict before conflict emerges, so that when conflict inevitably does emerge, you're prepared. You know what to do. And so these skills are skills I teach in all my courses. They're connection skills, how to stay emotionally connected when the drugs wear off. Their communication skills, which is divided into two fundamental categories. One, how to speak so that your partner doesn't feel threatened, and two, how to listen so your partner feels heard and understood. So you need to learn connection skills and then communication skills. Then you need to learn how to resolve conflict, what the process is to go through to talk about what's going on, discovering your needs, discovering your values, how to communicate about them in a way that doesn't occur as a threat, and then how to resolve conflict. And then finally, I think the fourth key critical skill is how to restore trust when inevitably you disappoint each other, betray each other, hurt each other. How do you repair to get back on the same page again? And that can all be done beforehand. The actual content, you can't really talk about too much because you won't know what it is unless you've done this plenty of times before in a previous relationship and you're self-aware and you know yourself inside out and you know your relationship stuff, you can share that. The chances are your partner won't have. So yeah, but there, you can learn these skills. That's exactly what we do at Love at First Fight. And in fact, you know, I'm going to give away a free gift later on where I'm going to teach you some of these skills for free just by joining my newsletter and one of my free online courses on my website at loveatfirstfight.com. So was there anything else you wanted to ask before I move on to number two?
No, that's good. Thank you.
Okay, awesome. Number two, the second most important thing I think single people can learn before they get into relationships or need to understand is that during the power struggle stage, an incredibly toxic and common pattern emerges that will catch you unawares if you're not expecting it. And what it will make you possibly want to leave the relationship, or at the very least, it will drive you freaking crazy. And if you're not expecting it, you may point fingers at your partner and blame them for it, which will just make things worse. And the pattern is this: one partner who tends to be a little bit more needy, I call them the hailstorm, will begin chasing the other partner who tends to be a little bit more emotionally shut down, who I call the turtle, to try to get the turtle to come out of their shell and play and connect. The turtle, being afraid of intimacy and emotional connection, will retreat further into their shell and withdraw. The hailstorm will then start hailing on top of them, which will make them withdraw more. The hailstorm will kind of chase them, which will make them withdraw more. And this dance goes round and round and round and round, the hailstorm chasing the turtle. And the more the hailstorm chases, the more the turtle withdraws. And this goes round and round until the couple blow up into a massive fight and don't talk for a week or break up. This is the single most common pattern that I see in all of my work with couples. And it is so heartbreaking to be in the midst of the pattern. I know personally, I've been caught in it many times before. And for the hailstorm who's afraid of abandonment, their partner's withdrawal triggers their childhood wound, unhealed wound of abandonment. And for the turtle, who's often afraid of being engulfed, this hailstorm kind of engulfing the turtle triggers the turtle's fear of engulfment, which makes them want to retreat more. And both people are traumatizing or re-traumatizing each other until they become conscious of what they're doing and they break the cycle. So if you catch yourself, if you know you're more hailstormy, catch yourself doing these things. Hailstorms drive their turtle partners into their shell by being critical, by pointing fingers and being blamey, by being demanding and insistent, sometimes being needy and clingy and desperate. And every one of these things will be repulsive to your turtle partner. Now, it's not always a hailstorm turtle partnership. Sometimes you get two hailstorms, sometimes you get two turtles, and there are actually three other of these types as well that I call chameleon, the wolf, and the sheep. But the most common two are the hailstorm and the turtle, and they account for probably 90% of my clients. We'll just talk about them. And if you catch yourself doing this, stop and be vulnerable. Share what's on your heart. Talk about what's going on inside here, not what's going on over there with your partner. Hailstorms almost can't help themselves but talk about their partner. You don't love me. Why are you never here? What's wrong with you? It's like you. And the turtle's like, oh, they retreat into their shell and like run away. Mm-hmm. So hailstorms, you've got to be aware of that. Turtles, here's what you've got to be aware of. Because you're afraid of either being rejected or being engulfed. Rejected means being judged as deficient in some way. When you experience being rejected or engulfed, you will numb your emotions, shut off or disconnect yourself from your heart, and retreat into your shell and hide out. And this will just make things worse. Although it may not feel like it in the moment, you can actually do something to make the situation better. And here's what I suggest you do. You stay present, don't run away. And instead of defending, reassure your partner that you love them and you're listening to them. That's what hailstorms often need in order to calm down and relax. That's kind of what soothes them. And they hear, honey, everything's going to be okay. I love you. I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here. Tell me what's going on. I'm listening. That's often when the hailstorm will calm down and soften. And then you get to learn that you can stay present and bad things won't happen. And that will prevent you from retreating more, because whenever you retreat, it's going to disconnect you from your partner and escalate conflict. Same for the hailstorm. Whenever the hailstorm gets all crazy angry, it's going to disconnect them. So what can the hailstorm do? The hailstorm can be vulnerable. What can the turtle do? The turtle can reassure the hailstorm. And that way, both of you soften the intensity of the conversation and you can talk through things and be honest and authentic about what's really going on. And you stand a chance of actually resolving things, repairing the damage, getting back on the same page, and being more safely connected afterwards. Mm-hmm. So that's the second idea. You will get caught up in this hailstorm turtle dance.
Can I ask you a couple of questions about that?
Yes.
So is the hailstorm kind of person maybe an anxious kind of attachment kind of style, or maybe someone who's more extroverted that wants the turtle to come out, and the turtle's maybe more of an avoidant kind of attachment style, or more of a introverted kind of personality? And I'm asking this because I was having this conversation yesterday with a woman, and she and her husband have been married, I think maybe 6-7 months. They're a little older, they're in their 70s, and it's mm-hmm. a second marriage. And she was telling me, we were driving in the car together, we went to see another sick person who's in a care center, and she's telling me, she said, what I'm finding is that I want to go out and play all the time, and I want to have people over all the time, and I want to be really social all the time, and he doesn't want to do that. He just mm-hmm. wants to stay home and put her around in his little workshop in the basement, mm-hmm. and she's expressing this to me, that this is becoming a bit of a conflict for them. So it sounds mm-hmm. like they're coming out of the romance, fall in love stage.
6-7 months, that's uh-huh. perfect time.
And now all of a sudden she's going, well, she said, uh-huh. I thought, this is exactly what she said, I thought we'd be having friends over all the time and being really uh-huh. social and interacting with lots of people. And that's not what he wants to do.
Yeah, exactly. So they're entering the power struggle stage. She's probably more extroverted. He's probably more introverted. Introvert and avoidantly attached is, they're not necessarily linked, neither is extrovert and anxiously attached, although having said that, there are overlaps, but they're not necessarily, like, I've met many introverted hailstorms and many extroverted turtles. They're not mutually dependent like that. But when I say hailstorm, I'm referring to anxious attachment. When I say turtle, I'm referring to avoidant attachment. When I say chameleon, I mean fearful avoidant attachment. And when I say wolf and sheep, I'm talking about disorganized attachment. And these are all things I teach in my programs. And it's important to know your attachment style. Knowing you're a hailstorm, you can catch yourself doing the hailstormy, critical, anxious, you know, angry, blamey thing. Knowing you're a turtle, you can catch yourself numbing out and withdrawing and retreating and stop yourself. Otherwise, we'll just end up torturing each other in that pattern over and over and over.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay.
So, third idea. Are we ready? Can we do number three?
Let's do it.
All right. So the third thing I think is critical for single people know before they get into a relationship is that relationship problems, and I know I'm talking about all the problems you're going to have, because, you know, we don't need to talk about how great things are going to be. You're going to be high on drugs. It's going to be wonderful for 6 months. So let's just go ahead and talk about when those drugs wear off. When you end up in conflict, I think the biggest cognitive mistake I see couples making is thinking that communication is what's going to fix their conflict. And so they learn communication tools and communication skills. And when they're feeling angry, or they're angry at each other, and they're feeling upset, they use their tools, and their tools often fail or make things worse and blow up. So I'll give you an example. Like, the ubiquitous couples therapist tool is this kind of sentence phrase that goes, "When you did X, I felt Y." And it's designed to stop two people pointing fingers and blaming each other. And you're supposed to be talking about yourself. And it's supposed to sound like, you know, when you didn't take out the trash, I felt hurt and disrespected and sad. But when a couple's disconnected and angry, it often sounds like, when you didn't take out the trash, I felt like you're just an asshole. You know, and the communication tool becomes a weapon.
Right.
To further, that kind of empowers you to further hurt each other. And it actually can make things worse, because inside of using these communication tools as weapons, now you've taken away the only resource you had. You were banking on that communication tool helping you. Now the communication tool's actually not worked. You're left feeling even more hopeless. Like, oh my gosh, if our tools don't work, we're screwed. Like, how are we going to do anything? And so, this is something I discovered by accident early on in learning about relationships. I realized that it's not communication we need. We know how to speak English. And I'll often joke with my clients. I'll like say to them, when they say, "Hey, will you teach us some communication skills?" I'm like, "No, actually, no, I'm not going to do that." I'm like, "Do you know how to speak English?" And they look at me and they're like, "Yeah." And they kind of laugh nervously. I'm like, "Think back to the Roman stage. Did you have any problem whatsoever communicating?" Like, "No." He says, "So why do you think you need communication skills?" And I, you know, I joke with him about it, and we make fun of it. And I say, "Now, what was different between the Roman stage and the power struggle stage?" And eventually what comes out is, like, we don't feel like we're on each other's side anymore. We don't feel like a team. We don't feel safe. We don't feel connected to each other. And so I realized that what has to come first is emotional connection. So you might think of it as emotional safety. And so I coined this phrase that's become kind of the foundation of all the work I do with couples, which is connect first, communicate later. And that's the third thing I want everybody to take away. Connect first, then communicate later. Never, ever, ever try to communicate with an angry person. You are wasting your time, or with an upset person. First, get connected. And then from the space of being a connected couple, you will communicate kindly, naturally, because you're not perceiving your partner as the enemy that you need to defend yourself from or protect yourself from. You're perceiving your partners being on the same side as you. And when you're standing side by side, safely connected, you can look out at the problem, and the two of you together attack the problem, not attack each other. And that way, the two of you collaborate as a team, and you're able to resolve what's going on, often naturally, without even needing communication skills. Now, I'm not saying communication tools are unimportant. They are important. They're just not the first thing that needs to happen. And that's the mistake I think 90% of couples therapists make. They teach their clients communication tools, and you will be blown away at how many of the couples come to me saying that couples therapy just made things worse. And I say to my clients, "Let me guess, they taught you communication tools, didn't they?" And they all nod. "Yep, we know how to communicate apparently, but apparently we still can't." And I'm like, no, you can communicate. It's just, you haven't learned how to connect yet. Once the drugs wore off, you're so used to connecting automatically in the Roman stage. In the power struggle stage, you need to learn how to connect when you don't feel like it, when there aren't any drugs flowing through your bloodstream. How do you create that oxytocin naturally without needing the Roman stage? And so that's the next thing. Now, how do you connect? Well, I've got at least 20 techniques that I teach in my courses. I'll give you one of them that's very simple. Go to your partner when you're in the middle of conflict, give them a hug and say, "I'm sorry I hurt you." Even if you think you've done nothing wrong, just apologize for having hurt them, because you should be sorry that you've hurt them. Even if you think you were innocent, the fact that your partner is hurt or looks like they're hurt or upset means, and that you were somehow involved, means you were involved in that somehow, some of the responsibility for their upset falls over here with you. And so just going up and giving them a hug, pulling them closer, hey, I love you. I'm sorry I hurt you. That's often enough to just soften the whole situation and bring it down to the point where the two of you are, instead of feeling threatened, and and now you can talk about what's going on from a place of being safe. When you give them a hug, I recommend you give them a hug for at least 10 seconds. Don't just give them a quick, you know, hi, goodbye, hug, bye, you know, and run off like an awkward hug. Like, hold them, pull them close, bring them close. I don't think it's good to kind of do this kind of stroking thing. It often detracts from being present. And we often do this when we feel uncomfortable with intimacy and we're feeling a little bit anxious ourselves. We do this to either soothe ourselves or to, like, somebody who might, you know, have a nervous tic. This is what we can often do when we're hugging our partner. It's a nervous tic on our part. Rather just hold them and embrace them for 10 seconds and do it in silence even. Just hold them close, close your eyes and feel each other and then whisper in the ear, I love you. I'm sorry I hurt you. Or I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. Or I'm sorry, you know, that this is happening to us right now. I want to make things better. That's it. I mean, there's many more ways to connect, but that's a good one. You know, if all else fails, you can always remember that. An apology with a long, meaningful hug, your partner sometimes may even burst into tears. Like, oh, I feel so much better as the relief just, you know, the weight lifts off their shoulder. And then you can sit down and say, okay, so what's going on? And use your communication tools and talk about things kindly and in a way that actually gets things resolved. So that's the essence of what I wanted to share. I'm happy to go in any kind of direction or we can, you know, wrap this up. But the first thing, just to recap, is relationships go through three developmental stages. You're likely to get stuck in the power struggle stage. Expect it and know there's nothing wrong with your relationship when you get to the power struggle stage. Two, in the power struggle stage, the most common pattern you're likely to fall prey to is this hailstorm chasing the turtle pattern that will go round, 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 destroy you. Hailstorm's afraid of abandonment, turtle's afraid of rejection or engulfment. And the way you get through this is by the hailstorm talking about their own feelings, rather than pointing fingers at the turtle. And the turtle staying present and reassuring the hailstorm. And the third thing is that if you try to communicate when one or both of you are upset, it's not going to go well. You've got to connect first, communicate later. If you remember that and you soothe your partner and connect with them first when you have an upset, chances are your communication is going to go a whole lot better. And you can try this out today, you know, with anybody in your life who's upset. If anybody comes to you and they're upset, don't try talking with them. Just give them a hug and hold them a little bit and watch how that calms them down. Then talk and listen and watch what a difference it makes. So that's what I got for you, Michelle.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I really, really appreciate what you've shared, Bruce, because I think it's really, really powerful. And this idea of connecting before communicating, I think is so powerful too, for so many people in conflict or with couples that have, you know, are in the challenging time and don't quite know what to do. But I want to ask you a follow-up question on that one, if I can.
Please.
That is, what about couples where the resentment, you know, this sounds all well and good, but I know you work with the tough cases. So what about couples where they've literally built up resentment after resentment after resentment, and maybe even the idea, like, to me, giving my husband a hug and saying, I'm sorry I hurt you, I could totally feel that I would be very happy to do that. And I could see how that could break down whatever was going on. In fact, we've done similar things to that when we've been in conflict, and then we can talk and then we can reconnect. But for couples that have built up resentment after resentment, and maybe even the thought of giving that hug or receiving that hug almost feels like, don't even come near me, or I don't even want to touch him kind of thing, right? Like, what if it's gone beyond the average conflict kind of stage?
Okay, two things. One is, you need to resolve and heal what I call never again moments. So usually for couples being together a long time, long enough to have resentment, there will be a never again moment, a moment in the relationship where one or both partners had this experience where they said, never again will I trust you to be there for me. And they shut down, they built walls around their hearts. And this will sabotage any attempts to repair, to reconnect, to, because every time it's like, nope, you abandoned me when I was giving birth, you were having a business meeting. Or nope, I found out that you had a secret bank account and you'd hidden it from me for 5 years and didn't tell me about it. Or nope, I, you know, like whatever it was, it's a betrayal. And nothing will sabotage your relationship more than unhealed betrayals. And so what I do with couples in that place is I take them through a very specific conversation that's too detailed to outline in the short amount of time we have here. But essentially, it's a process that deals with the never again moment and heals it. And there's certain things that have to happen. One of which is the offending partner needs to demonstrate, not say, demonstrate that their partner's pain and hurt hurts them. And this can't be faked. It's sometimes through a tear rolling down the cheek. It's sometimes through an expression of shock as the partner, the offending partner, realizes the impact they've had. And it's a difficult conversation to have on your own because often the emotions are so high, it's hard to talk about without an explosion. It's much easier to have with a mediator who knows the lay of the land and can safely guide the two of you to where you need to go. And that's often the second conversation I'll have when I'm seeing a new couple one-on-one for the first time. The first session I'd get to know them is, and I'll see if there's a never again moment. And it's the first thing I'll deal with is never again moment, because I know that it'll be impossible to get past that and do any good work until the never again moment is healed. And they can be healed, and anywhere between 45 to 90 minutes is enough if both people are willing to get through 20 years of repressed hurt and resentment and betrayal. And what happens is kind of like a series of dominoes. Once the first one falls, a lot of the other ones go, because often a couple will come to me, they've been together 20, 30 years, and they've got, well, which never again moment? We've got 20. Do we have to talk about all 20 of them? And I'm like, no, you just have to usually talk about one. It's the one is enough to soften and knock over the others, maybe two tops, but usually never more than two. And then you can start doing the work together. The second way to think of this is to kind of like the suck it up, buttercup, and just do it. Like, I don't feel like giving my partner a hug. That can often be a kind of like, well, why should I? Do they even deserve it? And I kind of, there's another way to think of that is like,
he's got to do it first.
Right? Yeah, or he's got to do it first. Typical hailstorm thing. You're like, no, I'm not going first. You go first. You prove to me that you love me. If you start first, then I'll respond, but I'm not going first. And really what that is playing the victim and refusing to be responsible for the fact that, okay, our relationship has a problem. And that means I have a problem because I'm part of the relationship. So I need to take responsibility for the fact that our relationship is a problem. Let me go and initiate some kind of repair with my partner. But the example I often give to my clients is like, you know, imagine you've been out to a restaurant with some friends, you've had a glass or two of wine, you get home, it's 2 a.m, you're super tired, all you want to do is fall asleep. Last thing you want to do is go to the bathroom and brush your teeth. Most of us will actually get out of bed and hobble to the bathroom, leery eyed, you know, keep the lights on, find the toothbrush, brush our teeth half asleep, wash our mouth out and go to bed. Do we feel like doing that? Hell no, we don't. But we do it. Why? Why do we do this? Because we have a commitment and we've made our commitment a habit. And the commitment is to having healthy teeth. And we've turned this into a habit that, you know, to not brush our teeth would be almost, you know, unthinkable. Maybe we do it once a year, but it certainly wouldn't be a habit. Now, in the same way, all of us have a commitment to our relationship, and that is to have a healthy relationship. And what's required sometimes is doing things that we don't feel like doing. And we need to do them anyway. And I think many of us, because maybe of Hollywood, fall prey to this mistaken belief that we should only do things when we feel like, and if we don't, it's not really loving, or if we don't, we're faking it. Hell no. I'm constantly doing things for my wife that I don't feel like doing. And that's how she knows I really love her. We are so different. When I, spend half an hour listening to her talk about her day, when I'd rather be out there kite surfing, and it really is pretty. I don't even know if you can see there, but the beach, you can't really see it. Anyway, that's the ocean right there.
Very well, but
it's very blurred.
We can see the blue.
I live on the beach in the Caribbean because I'm a kite surfing addict. When I don't go kite surfing and I sit and listen to her talk about her day, that's the most in love she can be with me, because she knows I've sacrificed something for her. And I think it's important to learn, it's a sign of maturity, to learn how to learn to do things we don't feel like doing that are good for us, or better still, that are good for our relationship.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for going there, Bruce. I know I could talk to you and talk to you all day, because I find—
For hours, I'm sure we could, yeah.
Yeah, because I find this really, really fascinating, but I know what you've shared will be really, really helpful to those that are listening. And I do want to give you a chance, I know you mentioned it, but to share a little bit more about your free gift.
Yes.
For everybody listening, the link will be right below the audio or video that you're watching from. That'll take you right to Bruce's free gift. But tell us a little bit about it.
Sure. So I have a free, what I call relationship help course. Now, I know none of you are in relationships watching this, but that's okay. You can just, ignore the part where I'm talking about relationships and imagine one day you're going to be. And in this course, it's a 7-day course, I teach you how to communicate, how to connect. I go through a lot of the basic tools that I teach my paying clients, and I give it away for free. And this way you get a chance to sample my material and see if working with me is something you want to do. And if any of you did want to do any of my programs, you would be more than welcome as a single person. I would probably say 5% of my clients are single. It's not a lot, but they're usually so happy they went through the program, because they know from past experience that their relationships arrive at the power struggle stage, because the power struggle stage has been when their relationships ended, and they recognize they are unskilled to get through the power struggle stage and they want to skill up. So if you ever did want to attend any of my programs, please don't think because you're single it wouldn't be appropriate. Absolutely, you'd be more than welcome. I'd be happy to have you. So you just need to go to Love at First Fight. That's fight with an F, not Love at First Sight. loveatfirstfight.com. Click on the button that says, free relationship help, or get the course, or sign up here, or whatever it is, and enter your email address, and I'll send you an email every day for 7 days with this course. And, if it's not what you're into, that's fine. You're welcome to unsubscribe at any point. But I think you'll find every email really valuable, because I teach a lot of critical stuff that isn't taught in the mainstream that I think will make a difference for a future relationship that you, when you eventually find Mr. or Miss Wright, it'll help.
Thank you, Bruce. And again, the link will also be right below the audio or video that people are watching from. So Bruce, I want to give you a chance, if you'd like, if there's anything you want to leave us with, or anything you wish I'd asked you that I didn't, I want to give you a chance to leave us the last word, and then we'll wrap for today.
If it isn't love, it's a misunderstanding. I'll leave you with that to ponder. If it isn't love, it's just a misunderstanding.
Okay, sounds good. That's a beautiful thought. So for everybody watching, we really want to thank you for being here. And Bruce, I want to thank you for your generosity and sharing. And we hope that all of you will join us for more of the Man Panel. Bye-bye for now.
Bye, guys. Bye.